This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, you're with Lee Chui Lin, and this hour we're going to be talking about what it's been like for students returning to school now that it has been a month or so, which is something of a full circle because we started off our day talking about SOPs in the workplace, and now we want to talk about how schools have been coping. Schools first started on the 15th of July with students that were Standard 5 and above, and then it kicked in fully when Standard 1 to 4 students returned on the 22nd. So if you're not familiar, here are some SOPs that schools have to follow. There are daily temperature checks, and teachers, school visitors and children are sent away if they record a body temperature that is over 37.5 degrees. Currently, outdoor sports and face-to-face co-curricular activities have also been stopped until further notice. Now, seeing as there's not going to be a vaccine soon, it's important to understand how kids are faring with these new SOPs in school and how it's impacting their mental, physical and emotional health, because it's not just learning that's had to change, it's social dynamics, right? They're playing differently, physical touch is discouraged, and I also wonder, I think, how much steam they might have lost, really, from having to miss out on relatively large chunks of the schooling year. And that's before we even get into what it's been like having to adjust from going to school every day to having the distance put on you by distance learning and the screen and the various challenges that come with that, and then going back to school. So it's a whole bunch of different things that we want to talk about, and mostly that we want an update on since it has been a little while, and just we want to know how kids are doing. So we're going to be speaking with Melissa Gomez, who's the co-founder of Edvolution Enterprise. But if you would like to tell us, you know, how have your kids been coping with the return to school? Have you found that they were really happy to see their friends? Have you found that, you know, the way that they learn and pick stuff up and engage has been different? You can call us and let us know. 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Balming frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It is 7:15. Sorry, the clock hung for a second, but it is 7:15 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. We're talking now about how getting an update on how students have been doing since it's been 2 months since they've returned to school. And we've also been asking you for your experiences in this area. I mean, if you have kids and if they're of school going age, what has it been like for them? And what has the transition back to school been? Again, if you would like to weigh in, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're crossing over now to Melissa Gomez, co-founder at Edvolution Enterprise, which is an organization that works closely with the Ministry of Education to push for continuous improvement in schools. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I gave a very brief idea of what the SOPs are, but could you describe to us what a regular day looks like in a school at the moment?
Okay, I'll just start off with the moment that the child enters the school and right when the bell rings, when the child leaves the school. So in a typical day, students would actually stop at the gate. So there'll be teachers at the gate at multiple entrances of the school. They will go through what we call the gate screening. So which means that the teacher would have a thermometer or a thermal scanner to screen their temperature. Now, if a particular child exceeds 37.5 degrees, then that's where the child will have to be put in an isolation room. So that's one of the standard operating procedures that was set by the ministry. Now, of course, the child walks in according to the pathway. So there is a particular pathway that the schools have been instructed to prepare and right up to the classroom. And, of course, in the classroom, students are seated 1 meter apart. So imagine that you're sitting for an examination. So that's the exact seating that students are sitting, of course, with the face mask on. On the table, there will be their name. They are not allowed to share any of their stationaries. They are not allowed to share their books. So they have their names on their table, which means that it limits their movement, which means they can't move anywhere. They can't cross over to their friends anytime that they wish. And when recess, during recess. So if you brought your food, students would then have to eat in the class. But if you are going, you're heading to the canteen, then of course you follow the pathway. All food, the canteen operators have been given the instruction to pack their food. So it means that the students will actually purchase those package and then will then return back to the classroom and eat their food. So that's really a limitation in terms of social interaction. And when it comes to classes, when it comes to dyslexia, that's where there is a stagger in time, where, for example, in the lower primary or lower secondary, students will go back at a certain particular time, and then followed by the upper primary or upper secondary. So that's basically a typical day of a Malaysian student who's going back to a national school. That would be some of the things that they will go through on a day-to-day basis.
Right. And so in theory, a lot of that sounds... it makes sense, and everybody seems to have been told exactly what to do. But in practice, have things been running smoothly?
I must say that a few months in the beginning, of course, one of the challenges that when we discussed with the state and the district education department and also the school leaders, I think their first challenge and concern was how do we get students adapt to those SOPs. So in the beginning, there were issues where you're trying to educate the kid, not only the child, but also the parent themselves. So that was some of the challenges that were faced in the beginning. So, of course, you know, some students do not walk according to the pathway, or, you know, they in the classroom, they had to limit themselves on social interaction. So constant reminders were had to be given. Now, that was just the beginning. And I think already nearly 3 months, I think a few months into school, I think we could see that the children or the students are actually adjusting themselves pretty well. And in fact, I think because it's a global pandemic where everyone is aware that it's a dangerous virus, even when students returned, they were very compliant to the SOPs. So that was something where we discussed with school leaders and also the state and the district education department. That was something we were also quite surprised that, in the sense that students were mentally ready to actually do the SOPs. And though there were just minor hiccups along the way, but I think from the school that I work with, we have seen that most of the students have been able to adjust themselves to the SOP.
And okay, so that's students. Have parents also adjusted well in terms of pickup time and things like that?
I think in terms of pickup time, that's something the school is also trying to work out. So, but I think we can see some of the schools that we see, the students are released. So the moment they are, because they're released in different timing, so that eases the disease. So not all students return back with parents. So some of them have their own transport, especially for the secondary schools. So we have seen in terms of the secondary school, it's quite okay. But in terms of the primary school, then you see, of course, like there'll be congestions because of parents coming in too early. But I think so far we have most of the schools have been able to sort out the time, and parents are also giving their best to adhere to the time. So in the sense that there are still challenges in terms of coming on time punctually, but I think the parents are also trying to adapt to that norm. And I think that's to me and also to the state and also to the district, that's something we find it's a good initiation from the parents to comply with the procedures.
And I think what I've also been really curious about is students adjusting to face-to-face learning, because, again, you know, for the last few months they've been apart from their classmates, you know, learning individually on screens. What has it been like to return to the classroom? Were they enthusiastic?
Honestly, I think when I first, so outsiders are not allowed to enter school, but on the first day when we called the school principals, this is especially true for the primary, they were very excited when they saw their peers. So I think you imagine that you're being excited and you like kind of like want to hug or your friends, so, and then needs to be that constraint. So I think of course they were very enthusiastic until the teachers also felt at one point like so bad, you know, they don't allow the students to express that happiness. So in the beginning, yes, our students are very enthusiastic. In fact, this is evidenced through their attendance. You see quite good attendance in the beginning. But unfortunately, as the, you know, when there was a second spike of the COVID-19 up in the northern region where I work, that's where we also are seeing right now a dwindling of attendance. Now, this is very clear, especially in the upper secondary school students, which is really a concerning, to the state and also to the district and, of course, to the schools. Because in the beginning, attendance was good, but right now we see that it's dwindling. And in fact, I think one of the states that we worked with has reported a 30% decrease of attendance for the entire schools in their state. So that's quite a pretty, a scary statistic to say that students are actually not coming to school.
Right. And is anything being done to address that? I mean, I recognize that it's early days. These are early statistics. And yet, I think, what you're talking about is quite frightening.
Yeah, it is. So these are not early statistics. In fact, these were the statistics that we found just about a couple of weeks ago. So we have been working and are monitoring attendance. Part of the work that we do is to monitor some of the students' attendance and participation. Now, in the beginning was in the first month of the COVID, when schools were open, we see quite good attendance. However, as the second month passed by and the following months, we see that the dwindling. And I think that's the biggest challenge here. You know, it's not about adjusting students to the SOP or, you know, the implementation of the SOP. But I think the biggest challenge that's happening right now is actually getting students back to school. So I think that's one of the things that, the state and the district that we work with are trying our very best to see just by going on one step of bringing back the students. So that's some of the things that we are working, that our first step with the state and the district that we work with is just to bring these students back to school. So we're trying to reach out to the parents, we're trying to track these parents, track these students, and some of the data that we have found based on our conversation with them is that some of their child has, you know, gone to take part-time jobs as Grab food riders, FoodPanda riders. So that's quite, that's something that that's something we are really concerned, and it's trying really hard to see how we can just bring these students back. Mm.
And I think there were also concerns about being able to keep up with the syllabus, right? Has it been manageable?
I think that's a very good question, actually. Of course, if the students themselves are not coming back to school and then there the teachers are faced with a huge syllabus to cover, that's also that's another concern that we have. So at present, what has been issued to schools, or what has been encouraged to the schools, is to what we call the minimum adequate syllabus, where it's basically like a teaching plan to cover the basic necessities of a subject. So you're covering subjects that are easy. You don't have to cover complex topics, but you just have to pick up lessons that based on the student's ability and also something that is that at least the students can understand. So that's one of the things that the schools are working hard. And I think also we see many private sectors and local NGOs are also trying to assist in recovering this learning gap that has been resulted from the school closure. I think one of the things that even my organization is doing is we have opening up what you call these free online lessons, where schools are opening up their computer labs after school hours, not after school hours, during school hours, to bring the students to learn. So that's some of the initiatives that we are trying to mitigate in this particular concern.
And I don't want to forget about teachers who have voiced, I think, a lot of concerns and their struggles over the last few months. How has it been how has it been for them?
I think for teachers, the pandemic has sort of like forced many teachers to get out of their comfort zone. And I'm glad that many of the teachers have successfully facilitated that change well in themselves. And I see that, you know, some of the teachers, even when schools open, they continue with recording videos, lessons, trying to distribute those lessons to the students. But I think as a teacher, what is most demotivating is when you see your students not coming to class. You know, when you see that, that out of 30 students, you only see a handful of students in school. So I think that's like, you know, in terms of, so that's the emotional aspect that most teachers are going through, where they see that, you know, his students are not being present. Of course, besides having to catch up with the syllabus, besides having to prepare for the examination classes, so I think teachers are facing like a triangular of emotions, stress, demotivated, worry, so on and so forth. Yeah.
And Melissa, in closing, have there been any specific takeaways then for schools and the system as a whole from this experience with the pandemic? And do you see this changing Malaysian education moving forward? A very lofty question, but, you know, what do you think?
No, but I think that's a really good question. Like, you know, even though, you know, it's a pandemic, but I think many good things have actually came out from the pandemic. And I think one of the things that we observe resulting from the pandemic is this, that we always think that education belongs to the school or education only belongs to the Ministry of Education. But I think the pandemic has also proved that education is the responsibility of every citizen. And I think just for an example, you know, when the pandemic happened, you know, people from the private sector, from local and just put in collective effort to help the schools. Now, just to give you an example, I think we have about right now 80 volunteers throughout Malaysia volunteered their time 1 hour a week just to dedicate teaching history and Malay with the aim to help this what we call these very weak students just to pass examination and at the same time to conduct online literacy classes to help the primary students. And not only that, we also see a group of doctors that actually volunteered their time to train and educate teachers on proper health hygiene. And these are all done for free. And I know of so many organizations, you know, who have been stepping up, you know, providing hand sanitizers and masks. And I hope that this will open the eyes of the government, that, you know, that the public is really, really interested to help education if there was more transparency in terms of data, in terms of what the needs of the school. Now, I'm just thinking that if a catastrophe like this COVID-19 can unite everyone and help schools, you know, what if, you know, the vision for the education system was for us to rebuild, you know, that system? I think that's something really that the community can play a part. And I hope that this is something that the government will realize that if they're able to unite everyone towards a common mission, I believe we will be able to see similar success as how the pandemic has shown us.
Melissa, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Melissa Gomez, co-founder at Edvolution Enterprise, giving us an update on what things have been like in schools since they reopened. We do have to head to the 7:30 news. This is the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.